Welcome to ATS Mix.
I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on the 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
I'd also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
The Internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board. ATS Mix. From AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
Hey, welcome everybody to the ATS Mix. I am, of course, Johnny Anonymous.
And I'm Dave Rabbit.
And I'm John Lear.
John Lear?
What the hell is he doing on the show?
What are you doing here?
Hey, well, listen, you guys, I get a buck every time they mention my name, so I have to mention it myself.
No, that's right. Yeah, I know what happened. You caught wind that we were going to be talking about you and hosting something from the San Jose UFO Expo, and so you wanted to be in on the action. Is that not the case?
Absolutely. We had a great time there, didn't we?
We sure did. We sure did.
Yeah.
If you don't know this, I'll go ahead and share it with you and, of course, our listeners, too, here at AboveTopSecret.com. I had the opportunity to drag a couple of video cameras with me, and in between John Lear interviewing John Lear, he also had some time to do some public speaking, and he did a couple of presentations, as a matter of fact. One of them was on the moon bases. And it was kind of like a little teaser, wasn't it, John? Wasn't it kind of like a teaser for the workshop?
Yeah, it was a teaser for the workshop, and just let me explain, the only reason I interviewed myself. Everybody says, what are you doing interviewing yourself? And I thought, well, nobody knows the subject better than me, so, and nobody knows the questions better than me.
And how are you?
I'm bound to get the right question.
Sure, sure. And how are you to interview?
Fantastic. I've never been interviewed by a guy that's more knowledgeable than John Lear.
I understand that this may have happened several years back, that you were doing a presentation or you were doing a speaking engagement, and I believe it was at a UFO expo, and you actually had some bodyguards that were with you. Could you tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, it was a UFO expo in Los Angeles, and a very good friend of mine, James Ehrman, put it on, and it was great. When I got to the expo, he took me aside and he said, hey, look, John, I've got a little thing going here. I hired some guys in black. They're wearing black suits. And what they're going to do is escort you all around, you know, like they're protecting you. And I said, hey, great, that sounds like fun. So these guys show up. There was like about four of them looking real serious. And, you know, every place I went, sit down to have a hamburger or, you know, go into an interview, these guys would stand right there, you know, looking around like, you better not touch my boy here. And it was great. It was a lot of fun.
Well, back to the UFO Expo. I was kind of surprised. Well, no, that's the wrong word. But I was amazed at how many people showed up to both the teaser presentation and then also the workshop. There had to be at least, what do you think, Dave? Maybe 750 people?
Well, the teaser, that place was, I don't know what the capacity of that room was, but I mean, there wasn't a vacant seat in the house. There was people standing up in the back, and there were people coming in and out trying to get in and out of the thing. So that probably was at least 750 to 1,000 seats in there.
Right. Now, you were talking about, and I had a slide, I don't know if it was a slide presentation or what kind of presentation it was, but you had some high-resolution photographs of some anomalies that were on the moon. How did you come across and come by these photographs?
Well, it all started when a guy named Bob Trilla, who lives in New York, sent me some drawings that a guy named Sweeney made many, many years ago of anomalies he had seen through a telescope. And they were just weird things on the moon. Boy, that's really interesting. So I struck up a friendship with Bob, and he said, well, come on over sometime to ever get to Chicago. One of my flights got me there. I went over to his house, and he showed me this book. He showed me a lot of pictures, but he showed me this one book by Alter Dinsmore called Pictorial History of the Moon. And on one of these pages was a photograph, Lunar Orbiter 5, 155M, from the Lunar Orbiter series that orbited the moon and took high-resolution pictures for, they were looking for Apollo landing places. And here, looking down on the Copernicus crater, were five cylindrical tanks. I mean, obviously, if not man-made, at least made by some kind of intelligence, there was no doubt about it. I was just stunned. And so I went and bought one of these books myself and started looking through these pictures. And then there was another picture that, of Copernicus, an oblique view. And this was Lunar Orbiter 2, 162H. And I remember the exact moment I was on standby in Los Angeles at the Hacienda Hotel, which is the famous crew hotel. And I was looking through this book, and I looked at this oblique view of Copernicus, and there were these little tanks with vapor coming out of the top of them, and the hair stood up on the back of my head. I thought, holy smokes, there is really something there. And so a few days later, I ordered a set of these photos, Lunar Orbiter 2, 162H, 155, and from the NASA contractor, and they came in the mail, a couple weeks later. But instead of coming in positive prints that I could look at, they came unbelievably in the form of 16 by 20, that's 16 inches by 20-inch negatives. Well, of course, and this is like, 10 years ago, and of course, we had no way to print a 16 by 20 negative. I mean, the biggest thing that people are doing is 35 millimeter, occasionally, 2x2 or 4x5. So it took about 5 years for the technology to get to the point where I could go down to a place and get this thing printed.
Sure. Wow. Now, what we did here, as I mentioned before, is that I took a video camera in and I videotaped your presentation there. And that is actually what we're going to be presenting here as this special ATS Mix episode. Now, a lot of folks will obviously not be able to see the photographs. It'll give you the illusion that you're there, but blind. So for our listeners, if they wanted to come see what some of these photographs look like, is there a website or a thread or someplace that you've got these photographs up at?
Yeah, all of these photos are in full resolution on the website, which is called thelivingmoon.com.
Well, listen, before we end this thing, I thought I would have
an end to it? Wait a minute. It's almost over. Okay, go ahead.
I'll tell you something that freaks a few people out, and that's Kenny G music.
Is that an inside joke?
That's kind of an inside joke. In fact, we should probably, I hear, John Lear, that you have an amazing factoid about Kenny G. Could you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, I sure can. A lot of people want to know how he actually makes his music, and what he does is when he gets up in the morning, he turns on his drum machine. Then he turns on the recorder, and then he grabs his saxophone, goes back to sleep. Before he goes back to sleep, he sets the alarm for 1 hour. And as he goes back to sleep, he takes his saxophone with him and puts the mouthpiece in his mouth and then goes to sleep. And he, as he's sleeping, he goes... 1 hour later, he wakes up, and he turns off the recorder and divides it into all the music into six-minute segments, and that's his album.
So, in other words, he makes his music out of what most people would say sucks and blows.
Right. That's exactly it. That's the extent of his music.
I knew you were going there.
As a small disclaimer, we mean no offense to any aficionados of Kenny G. I myself happen to maybe own a Kenny G record somewhere.
You know that, Kenny, if you're listening, you know that we're just kidding because
we are
really
kidding.
May play the absolute worst music I've ever heard of.
That was John Lear that said that, Kenny.
Might have to add another disclaimer on that one. Well, listen, let's go ahead and get into our presentation here and once again remind our listeners that we have some video links so that you can then watch the video if you get a chance to come by the ATS Mix thread featuring John Lear. In the meantime, we hope you'll enjoy this. I'm Johnny Anonymous.
I'm John Lear.
And I'm John Lear. Thanks very much for being with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're about to begin the lecture by John Lear. My name is John Rhodes. Many of you know me here, but my function today is actually to facilitate the introduction of Mr. Lear. who's a very good friend of mine. Our associations go back a number of years. And as you well know his name, for 22 years he's been out here speaking about this subject matter with an authority as a commercial airline pilot with thousands of hours of flying time. So he's the perfect eyewitness and investigator into anything that has to do with flying phenomenon. John is rated in over 100 aircraft. He has been flying with airlines commercially and privately in over 60 countries. He's held 17 world speed records for flight. He's the senior vice commander of the China One Post. He's also a 24-year member of the Special Ops Association, with many, many years overseas working for the Central Intelligence Agency as a pilot. Today's lecture is called The Living Moon, How and Where the Cover-Up Started in 1870. As an amendment to his introduction, I would just like to say that this gentleman has really sacrificed a lot. His career was severely affected by his speaking publicly on the subject matter. His integrity is unquestionable. His accuracy is really quite unique in this field. I know because I double-checked on a couple of things that John has said, as we all do. But more than that, this is a gentleman that will literally give you his soul before he ever takes a dollar in profit. And that's a very rare thing in this field. Still, he hasn't got the book or the DVD, so we belong in a small select club, he and myself. This information is being put out there to help people on a journey of exploration for not only their mental exercise, but also their spiritual exercise. If you need to see any of John's most recent notes, you can find them on AboveTopSecret.com, where he has his own blog, and also downstairs, John, his wisdom has come up with the perfect device to make sure that you can remain independent from any kind of mind control. You will also be a welcomed guest at any Thanksgiving dinner where they forgot the tinfoil. And it's quite stylish, as you can see, with a feather in the cap. And without saying anything more, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce to you my good friend and colleague, John Lear.
Bad news first. We've been scammed again. The good news is I figured it out. For a number of years, I just looked at the moon like the rest of us, and just looked like something up there. I believed it. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that we went there in Apollo 11, 12. 14, 15, 16, 17, and the words of James Lovell as they went around, I think, in Apollo 8, saying it's, you know, dead, chalky substance, you know, no gray, no nothing. And I really believe that. And a number of years ago, a friend of mine in Chicago said, get a chance, come on over, and I want to show you some pictures. And I went over, and he had a book, a Canadian book. It was called, I think it was Pictorial History of the Moon by Charrington. And he showed me a photo from Lunar Orbiter 5, and I didn't even know the Lunar Orbiter series then. Lunar Orbiter 5, and it was 155M. And it showed an overview from directly down on the crater Copernicus. And there was five huge cylindrical tanks. I mean, it was obvious. And it was fascinating. What, you know, who put those there? I mean, there was no doubt about it. I mean, it couldn't have been, you know, something natural. It was huge, great big tanks. So then, a few weeks later, I had ordered a copy, and I remember the exact moment that I was sitting up in the bed at the Hacienda Hotel, LA International, waiting for a flight. And I was had another photo in this book, and this one was Lunar Orbiter 2, 162, and that was an oblique photo taken in an angle of the same crater. And I looked, and I was looking at it, and I saw vapor clouds going up in this photo. And it was just amazing. I mean, I got the hairs went up on the back of my neck, and it was just thrilling. I said, there's something going on up there. And I remember calling Richard Hoagland and talked to him about it, and he said, well, you know, draw what you see and send it to me. And I frantically drew what I saw in this photo, put the number of the photo and everything, and FedExed it for the next morning. And this is my first experience with how FedEx can, you know, track anything, because it didn't get there the next morning. And when I called, I said, what happened? They said, you know, it missed the sort. The sort is when the airplanes all come into Lake Memphis and then they all go out. When they come in, that's called the sort, where they change all the packages. And I got it free, and it eventually got to Richard, but he didn't have much to say on it. And so over the years, I started ordering photos from NASA. And I think it was like in 1996 or 97, I ordered five photos, and one of them was this 62M of the Copernicus crater, the oblique photo. And when it came in a tube as a negative. Now, I'd never heard of anybody having negatives, and this was a 16 by 20 negative. It's huge. Like that, I thought I was going to get a print that I could look at, you know. So in those days, of course, technology wasn't advanced. Nobody had any way to enlarge a negative or print a negative like that. I did get a contact print, but of course that gives you a negative that you can't tell too much. And so it was like maybe 4 or 5 years until the technology got to where I could take this negative down and get it printed. And when I did, it was just amazing what I saw. It just, there was stuff all over the place. So I took it over to Bob Lazar's house, and he made four scans of it. Call them Copernicus 1, 2, 3, and 4, and put them on the computer. And one of the scans shows, and I'll show you in a minute here, a little building up there. And I remember first talking about the stuff on the moon with Bob Lazar, and I went to leave his house one day, and you know, I was trying to convince him the stuff up there, and as I got to the door, he said, you know, John, if any of the stuff is true, I'm going to have to kill myself. So I took the, I had the foresight to get him to put that on paper and sign it. I don't have a copy here, but I do have a copy that I posted on Above Top Secret. And 2 years later, when we got these scans in, it shows a building on Copernicus. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Even Bob Lazar had to say, yeah, that's a building. And so as I'm about to walk out, and this 2 years later, I said, Bob, you know, I know you're going to honor your promise, and you did promise to kill yourself. And he said, well, Mike, is there any way I can get out of it? And I said, well, I'll tell you what, if you'll sign this little paper, and it says, I, Bob Lazar, in return for not having to kill myself, do admit that there is a building on the moon. Signed, Bob Lazar, and I put the date there. So anyway, those photos sat around until I think a year and a half or a year ago, and I was working, posting on Above Top Secret, and I thought, you know, I'd like to put those on those and see what the guys have to say, because Above Top Secret, they talk about everything, and there's some really sharp guys on there. And we put those four photos on there, and we put them in high res so they could see all the stuff that I saw. And put them on there, and people just finally, after about, you know, the first week, everybody said, I don't know, I think you're seeing things, John. Then one by one, the guys started to see, hey, no, wait a minute, I see something. Then somebody else said, no, no, I see something, you know, and then we saw all kinds of stuff. So that led to me getting some photos of the moon from a guy we knew in England, because, you know, there's only about 6 or 7 photos that NASA has ever released, or prior to that time, of the moon. I mean, they just weren't there. There's some Lick Observatory photos, like, you know, 4 or 5 of them of a full moon. I think 3 of them of a full moon, and then in various stages. But there wasn't a real clear picture of the moon. And so we got Mike over in England to take some picture, and he took some real high-res pictures of the moon. And he took 192 frames of the moon and then put them all together seamlessly and put them together. And when we got it, we couldn't believe what we're seeing. If you look at the moon, that little dot right there is one of the brightest objects on the moon. And NASA's never said that much about it. It's a crater called Aristarchus, and any photo I've ever seen, starting back to Lick Observer, Lick Observatory photos back to 1938, that photo is always just white, pure white. It's like somebody just took a pen and a white out pen and made it pure white. And whenever you ask anybody a question about it, they say, yeah, I don't know what it is. It looks like white. That's what it is. And if you can't see it, that is the hexagonal shape fusion reactor, on the moon. That's Aristarchus right there. That's enlarged. You can see the arches, and right there, arches. And I'm going to show you another picture of the different flows. Down here, there's a road. Right here, there's an entrance. Here, the road goes in inside the thing here. There's some tunnels here, and I'll show you. But anyway, we saw this react. I mean, that's all it could be. What you see, the blue spot, that's where radiation contacts with air molecules and turns blue, just like it does here on Earth in the air or in the water. So we saw this and another of other pictures, and then I decided to take a look at the far side. I mean, I said, if there's this stuff on the front side, what must be on the back side? So I remember it was last December 4th. I had for some reason, about 10 years ago, I went up to Portland, where my daughter lived, and there was a big bookstore there. I forget the name of it. And I bought all the NASA books, and they were all like pre-1970. The importance of pre-1970 is before 1970, they weren't too particular about how they airbrushed stuff out. After 1970, they did a terrific job because they realized, you know, that they had to get this covered up. But the pre-1970 stuff, and it's still available, has the poor airbrush job, and I'll show you what they did. So I took this book, and I thumbed through it, and I saw a picture of Lomonosov Crater, and it just looked weird. I'll show it to you in a minute. It had some, what the NASA calls ejecta, white ejecta. White ejecta is NASA's name for white out. What they put on there. They call it white ejecta, but it's just white up. And they use it to cover up cities and the buildings and stuff like that. I'll show you how it works here. And I enlarged it, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I mean, I'll show you the pictures in a minute. There was obviously a space terminal. There was obviously a city square with roads and buildings And so then we started getting all these pictures, and I had a friend, a guy on Above Top Secret named Zorgon. Turns out to be Ron Schmidt, who's my associate now, research associate. And he started looking at this stuff and delving into it and finding more and more. So this one picture is Apollo 8. And it was taken by the Apollo 8 crew, and right here is the crater Humboldt. We are over the Terminator. This picture was actually taken when the Terminator, that's the the separation between light and dark on the moon. This is the sign that we can see, and it just happened. This was a full moon. This is the crater Humboldt, and this is the sign we can see. Now look up here. See that? See that bright spot? You see those things coming down there? Let me see if I got a... That is not a crater. Those are lights. Those are whatever they are, stand-up walls or stuff. Those are all kinds of little things that they got around there. I don't know whether they're roads or what. If on the CD that we got downstairs called The Living Moon, it's got 650 megabytes of photos. And this photo is on there. You can enlarge it. You can say there's all kinds of little lights and everything. This is obviously a city, and it's in Batavius B. This is the crater Endymion. If you're looking at the moon, the full moon, it's up at about the 1 o'clock position, almost on the edge. This is a photo that was taken by Lick Observatory, and it's about the clearest photo that you can get released by the government. You can see the crater floor there, and you can see on each side some kind of stuff sticking up there. This is the exact same crater taken by Mike in England. Now remember, NASA and the Lick Observatory are using a 36-inch telescope. Mike has only got a 10-inch telescope. So look at the clarity here of the Endymion crater here, and you can see here those antennas. There's a huge, big antenna there and a parabolic spherical antenna over there. That's Endymion. This is an oblique photo of Copernicus. This is the one that we've got so much information on. These are enlargements of the mining operation. You can see it's all terraced there. Right here, you see vapor going up there, vapor going up there. Up here, and it'll be easier if you get the tape. You can see the building up here, and I've got an enlargement up here. Over here is a crane. And when Ron Schmidt, whose avatar is Zorgon, started looking at these, what we were looking at is we had two photos, this one and the one directly overhead. And even though they were taken 18 months apart, what we were trying to find was this smoking gun. One thing that was in here that we could see in there, and we found it, and it's this crane right here. The reason I have trouble with this red dot is I'm red-green colorblind, so I have to shine it on something to show it. Right there is a crane, and I'm going to show it to you in another photo here. Okay, now this is the building, and this is a close-up. I'm going to show you this is three floors right here, and this is the what I call ramp. Now I call this facetiously a parking garage. But it is definitely a three-story building. Somebody built it, put it on the moon. That's a colorized version of it. This, I'll show you where this is. This is a long ramp. And you can see right here the beautiful arches right there. And the arches go in like that. Let's see if I got a colorized version of it. Here's a colorized version. You can see the arches down there. I wish I could see red. I could find that dot. Here is a bucket wheel excavator. And it's really interesting because I looked at this thing for years. And I was trying to make it out as a tank. And the vapor was flowing out. But it's not. That is a bucket wheel excavator. And that's dust coming out of the dirt, coming out of the top of the excavator and flowing down the hillside. That's an enlargement, and you can see some of the buckets right there. Okay, now these are the two vapors, indication of vapors there, that are going up. And of course, if the moon is a vacuum, you can't have vapor. So this is one of the evidence that there is certainly an atmosphere on the moon. This is a photo that Ron put together to show you all the stuffs in that one photo. This is the crane right there, and this is it colorized right there. This is the left portion of the crater Copernicus. And this thing right here is the bucket wheel excavator. And here's what's really interesting. This is what we call the keep. It's a road. It goes all the way from here, all the way up there, and there's all kinds of things on that road. There's buildings, I'll show you a bucket wheel excavator, there's cranes, there's all kinds of stuff up there. And up here, there's all kinds of stuff up there. Here we have smoke, there's a building, there's a graded roadbed. Here's all kinds of stuff. All this is on the thing. And this is the wheel, which is this, a bucket wheel excavator up there. It's huge. Now, as we're putting this up there, sometimes we get a little feedback from NASA and through guys that post on the web. And one of them said, yeah, NASA had found a lot of that ancient stuff. You know, it's been there for, you know, millions of years. And I said, well, if that's the case, then you better tell them that it's still running and they need to turn it on. This is what we call a dump because there's just all kinds of stuff in there. It looks like parts of spaceships and buildings and all kinds of junk there. I'm sorry, can you guys see what kind of what I'm looking at here? I can't do it on both sides the way they got set up here. There's more of the dump. You can see something there they pose here. This is the Marius crater. By the way, this is Kepler. Now, see all that stuff here? All that's construction. This is a mining camp. You can see all the dust and the stuff coming down there. And this is a bunch of buildings right there. I'll see if we can enlarge it for you. And this white slab is part of a cover-up. I don't know what's there, but they obviously painted that part in. Now, you can see there, that's the little city. That's the slab. This is the mining operation. You can see the road. You can see dust coming down, all that, and all this construction over here. Now, this is from Lunar Orbiter, and I forget what the number is. Several years later, the NASA Apollo 15 took a picture to get a clearer picture of all this. That's the clearer picture. Naturally, everything's gone. No mining camp, no city, no part here, no part there. Let me just take it back just to remind you. That was taken by Lunar Orbiter. That was taken by Apollo 15. Now, do you see any airbrush work there? Kepler. It's Kepler. Here is a beautiful... Oh, wait a minute. Can't see something. I was going to show you something really neat on the moon, but it appears that... NASA is airbrushed it anyway. Now here, this next one is really the... Oh, no. I was going to show you something really fantastic. Damn. Here we're back to the Arcturus, Aristarchus. And this is NASA's picture of Aristarchus. Now look at the difference. Now I put them so that they're facing the same from the same general direction. This is the fusion reactor, but you look at NASA's crater, and it looks somewhat different. Okay, now I took the time, sit in the dark, and look at these photos. And if you get the CD, you can look yourself. But this is what I see. In the back, there's definitely curved structures. I don't know whether where people live or what it is. This is a hexagonal-shaped dome. There's no question about that. You can see the containment of the radiation. I mean, it's obviously a circle of some kind that's containing it. This is a flow out of some kind. You can see this obvious rectangular opening down here. You can see an obvious road that goes like there. There's obviously three tunnel openings right there. You can see arches right there. I wonder if there's anybody on the moon. Do you think this is formed naturally? You can see containments, like a containment pool. But anyway, really interesting things. And the way I do is at night, you know, turn off all the lights and get the computer and my eyes adjust and then turn it on and then look at it. It takes a while. It's not something that you can switch from looking at the King and Queens or something like that and then turn this on and look at it. You have to get your eyes adjusted for a little while. You're saying now, okay, all that stuff is on the moon. You know, I thought there was 1/6 gravity, and I thought there was no atmosphere. And, you know, how could anybody live up there if there's no atmosphere? Well, I'd like to straighten out the gravity situation first. Is the gravity on the moon is about 64% that of Earth. All that stuff you saw on Apollo 11 and all of that film, it was all fake. And that's why the people who don't believe we went there, say, oh, that's fake. Yeah, that was fake. But it was fake for a reason. We did go there, but it's what we found out there that we're keeping a secret. And the main things we found is that the gravity is 64%, that there is an atmosphere, the sky is not black, the sky is yellow, and there's people that live there. So one of the things we got to start with is, well, how do we know that the gravity is 64%? And mainstream science will say, well, because we know Newton's universal law of gravitation, that the moon has a density of 3.3 grams per centimeter squared, and we know that the Earth has 5.5 grams per centimeter. It's all BS. I mean, they don't know what the density of the moon is any more than they know what the density of the Earth is. They had to hypothesize that the Earth has an iron core just to make that stuff come out. You know, it doesn't. The only way you can really do it is to use the Bolyai-Newton inverse square law, which states that any physical quantity or strength is inversely proportional to the square of the distance between them, specifically the gravitational attraction between two massive objects, in addition to being directly proportional to the product of their masses, is inversely proportional to the square of the distance between. What that means is we don't need to know what the density of the moon and the Earth is to find out the neutral point. All we need to know is the size and where the neutral point is. So the neutral point by NASA has been given us for years at 24,000 miles because using the inverse square law, that works out to be 1/6 gravity. But what we have here is we know the distance, we know the size of the Earth and the size of the moon, we don't have to know the density, and we know the neutral point. How do we know the neutral point? There's many ways we know the neutral point, but the main one is Wernher von Braun told us in 1972 that it was 43,495 miles. So we know the neutral point, and all we have to do is, therefore, we can state the following from the parameters: the radius of the moon, the radius of the Earth, the distance from the Earth's center to the neutral point, the distance from the moon's contact to the neutral point, and we just run that out. I mean, I failed math, but even I could figure that out. It didn't take too long. I had to have a big computer. And you come down here to the bottom where the moon's moon's gravity is 64%. Why that's important is it means if it's 64%, then it can hold an atmosphere. If it holds an atmosphere, then people live there. But this is a picture that shows the moon taken by Lick Observatory in 1947. And get that little red dot up there so that I can see it. See that up there? That's a huge explosion. That's Endymion, that little crater right there. That there is a huge explosion. Let me see if I have an enlargement up here, right here. See that? That's a plume that is the explosion has exploded, and that plume of dirt and dust has drifted about 25 miles to the northwest and is starting to rise. And you can see it's rising, and when it hits the top of the atmosphere, it spreads out like that. Now, that can't happen in a vacuum. There has to be an atmosphere for that to occur in. Here it is here. You can see the plume drifting. That's about 25 miles, and then heading up into the atmosphere. Because of dust, you can't have a plume. He's asking why you do. Minutes? Holy smokes! We're going to have to continue this, but he's asking about why the plume, dust and plume won't hold together in a vacuum. It has to have an atmosphere to hold it together. So anyway, I want to show you quick, and we'll end it up here. This is King's Crater on the back side of the moon. See all that stuff there? That's all the, I don't know how we got that far. I lost it. I must have clicked it. Oh, here we are. I see what's happening. I'm hitting the wrong buttons. That's King's Crater. That's the vegetation there. This is the backside of the moon. This was taken by Russia. Let me show you a quick couple of things here. This is... there's some fantastic things in this picture. There's a huge mushroom. Oh, here it is, right here. Just stands up. It's perfect. This thing down here, that's a 40-mile building. We're going to have to hustle right along here. That's it right there. See that building right there? That is 40 miles wide, and those are three huge cylinders that stick up, and that's a great big arch. That's it enlarged. This is Daedalus. That's a building right there. Anyway, we'll go into the rest of this. That's a huge arch on the moon right there. Beautiful construction. This is the thing that... How do that time? It's been great talking to you.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.abovetopsecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll be right back.